Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Drexel.
And today on the pod, we are going to talk about the bananas Russia indictments out of Mueller's office.
Yeah, it was a really, like, weird Friday.
It was Friday.
Going into President's Day.
Right.
But I always, like, traditionally, news, you know, take out the trash day.
Sure.
Is Friday.
Sure.
We don't get news on a Friday. It's always a full lid at the White House because there's nothing really going on.
Right, right.
But it's been a full lid for the past 4 days at the White House because Sarah Huckabee Sanders is afraid of everybody. So she, and afraid of questions like this White House is. So, like, having everything come out, like, towards the end of the week is really, I guess that's Mueller's way of being like, you're not going to be able to hide
right.
things on Friday.
You're not going to be able to explain this away over the weekend,
right.
basically. So in addition to that, I sat down with Shannon Watts on Saturday morning. She took time out of her Saturday to speak to me about... Shannon Watts from Moms Demand Action. She founded the organization, and they focus on common sense gun reform. They also just created an arm called Students Demand Action in response to the Parkland, Florida school shooting. And we had a really enlightening conversation about what's going on with that.
What was really interesting about Parkland, as opposed to some of the other shootings that we've seen in the past, is how there was not, obviously there's a lot of sadness in everything that happened across the country, but I felt an energy shift, and I don't know if listeners out there felt it or if you felt it. I felt like an anger shift.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, you know, when Sandy Hook happened and when Las Vegas happened, and there was a lot of, you know, reflection
yeah.
on, like, and people just feeling like they were helpless. But Parkland seemed different, and I feel like it had a lot to do with the reaction from the students and how they swiftly came out the next day and within the days later, and they've been on the news and the news cycles like that over these past few days, and how they, I mean, these are like mini adults. Oh. Like, they're ready to run for president.
Oh.
Like, they probably do a better job than 44. By the way, happy President's Day, everybody.
Except for Trump.
1 through 44, you're all good.
You're
happy
fine.
President's Day, you're fine. It's Washington's birthday.
Cool.
Other than that, 45, meh, maybe not your day.
Right. Maybe don't celebrate it.
Maybe don't celebrate yourself.
Yeah, just don't. Yeah, no, these students are pissed. And they're saying, like, we want to politicize this.
Right.
We want to talk about this now. You are using our lives as collateral damage in this bullshit.
And I like that they're also targeting very specific people.
Yes.
They're not going about talking generally about right. Republicans and Democrats coming together. They're saying, this is what's happened in our state. Governor Scott, Marco Rubio, you need to get it together. You need to go after the NRA. And they're calling out very specific people.
Right.
Ironically, and they did not call out Bill Nelson of Florida, Democratic
right.
Bill Nelson of Florida, because he obviously is, you know, not as
beholden to the NRA.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think that that is a lesson that Democrats need to continue to take on certain issues by calling people out individually so that they have to respond to that.
Yeah, like, don't be afraid to name check people.
Right.
You know, don't generalize this. This is a specific problem. It needs a specific solution.
Right. If Democrats can name check each other,
right,
we can start to name check the opposition.
I talk about how hard it is for me to feed myself properly while working on the show. And it's true. And I've started using a new product from Aura Organic. They are a company that was created by and for foodies to replace synthetic supplements with nutrients from organic and sustainable sources. They sent me their So Lean and So Clean protein powder, and it is USDA certified organic protein powder with over 20 different organic superfood ingredients. And it comes in chocolate, vanilla, and chai that go perfectly with milk or in a smoothie. Can attest, it is amazing. It's perfect for busy professionals, moms and dads on the go, athletes, students, and health junkies. And me, who is sort of two of those things, and I'll let you guess which two. But mostly I'm really bad at feeding myself. And plant-based protein supports normal bodily function, muscle recovery and growth, and digestion. Oro Organic does not include ingredients in their products that they don't believe aren't necessary. That's why their products are organic, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, non-GMO, and don't contain anything artificial. And they are still somehow delicious, but don't tell the part of my brain that loves cheese. You can try Oro Organic with 15% off your first order using the code HELLBENT at ora.organic. That's 15% off at Oro, ORA.organic. And use the code HELLBENT.
To some listener feedback from last week. You had a really great interview last Thursday. I always enjoy your interviews.
Thank you.
They're so good.
One of the nicest things anyone ever said to me was that,
other than what I just said?
Drexel, you just said the nicest thing to me. Fine. But seriously, is someone complimented me on how much I've improved as an interviewer,
yeah,
which means so much to me. Because when I started this, I remember before our first interview, I was so nervous. I think I threw up. Like, that's how nervous I was.
It takes a little bit of, like, if you haven't ever done it before, I think, you know, people that listen to podcasts or watch TV show, or, you know, interviews or, you know, I think they, sometimes there is a sense that you're invincible on one side.
Right.
And, you know, you and Sarah started this whole thing without having a clue as to what to do. And, you know, and I think that obviously people really appreciate everything that HellBent is to them. And so, you know, there is the difference is that you guys are human and that listeners know that. And so it's really good to see that, you know, that these interviews are just getting better and better.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a really great interview. I talked to Laura Moser, who's running for Texas 7, and she was so smart and wonderful to talk to. We recorded the interview before the school shooting in Florida, so we didn't address any of that. So it felt kind of weird to put out the interview the day after the shooting with almost no context, but I did, you know, she took time out of her day. She talked to me. She was great. She was the first in our series of female candidate interviews that we're launching. So I really wanted to do that. And so before I did the interview, I had this whole monologue that I wrote about the Florida shooting. And it was actually really hard. The episode on Thursday went out late, really late, like 6 o'clock late, because I ended up rewriting and re-recording the monologue several times. I was having a hard time getting through it. I was having a hard time editing it. And I was just really emotional. And, you know, a lot of people have said to me, oh, it's because you're a mom now. I'm like, no, it's not. It's because I'm a human being. And that was one of the most devastating things I've seen in a long time. And so it really affected me. And so I got a lot of positive response to that, which, again, means a lot to me. One in particular, Melanie tweeted, she said, thank you for Thursday's Hellbent episode. I know it can't be easy to talk about this kind of stuff, especially alone. You're holding it down like a fucking boss, which I also appreciate because, you know, it can be hard without Sarah. We all miss her. So
we do that. We do. Come back.
Come back, Sarah. Come back. So yeah, that was really great to hear that feedback. Also your feedback, Drexel. I love it when you compliment me.
I do. I, you know, I love giving compliments.
I know. You're good at it too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that you gave me a compliment about my compliments. That's great.
Yeah. Also, I want to remind everyone to rate us 5 stars on iTunes and subscribe. It really helps other people find the show and grow. And speaking of, we don't want to give too many details yet, but Drexel and I are planning something special for our 100th episode.
We are. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
So, you know, be prepared.
I know. I'm really excited.
Not in the scar way, though.
No.
No, don't be prepared in that way. Be prepared in the good way.
Right. Be prepared in a good way. It's going to be great. And if you're in the Los Angeles area, it could be very exciting.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
All right, Devin, so at the top of the show, we talked about the really weird end of the week last week. It was so fucking weird. Not take out the trash day. It was just trash day.
It was just trash day.
Just White House trash day. So tell us a little bit about what happened from the Mueller investigation.
Okay, so the Mueller investigation comes out of nowhere, but not out of nowhere. It's just the Mueller investigation doesn't leak. There's no leaking. So he knows, and that investigation knows so much more than we can even comprehend at the moment. So on Friday, the Mueller team announces they have filed indictment against a group of people that no one really thought indictments would come against.
Who are the defendants?
They're Russians.
Are they Russian Americans?
No.
Can we indict foreign nationals?
Yeah, I mean, we can indict whoever we want. It's just a matter of getting them into a courtroom.
Got it.
The analysis and what I've heard over the weekend is that Mueller indicting these individuals and three Russian businesses as well is not necessarily about getting them to come to the United States and stand trial and serve prison time or sort out what's going on. What it feels like is that this is sort of setting up the framework of the story. So here's this indictment against 16 individuals and three entities. And this is what we know happened. The first indictment was charges to defraud the United States. The second count is charges the Russian business Internet Research Agency, that's the name of it, and two of its employees specifically with conspiracy to commit wire fraud and bank fraud. And let's put a pin in that. We'll get to that in a minute. And then the rest of the charges, so 3 through 8, charges that same company, the Internet Research Agency, and four of its employees with aggravated identity theft. So obviously the identity theft and the wire fraud and bank fraud are sort of linked here.
Right.
From what I understand, and I'm not a lawyer, but from what I understand, the Internet Research Agency basically set up an operation. It was a Russian troll farm.
Basically.
Yeah. And they set up a huge operation to produce content and propaganda for the 2016 election and to specifically sow discord in our democracy.
But to be clear, this Russian troll farm was set up 2 years prior,
yes,
to the 2016 election. Hillary Clinton had not announced that she was running until 2015.
Even Trump didn't announce.
Trump didn't announce till June. Bernie Sanders had announced in April.
Right.
Jill Stein somewhere in between that.
Right.
Actually, she probably announced in Russia.
Sitting at a table.
Table with Michael Flynn and Vladimir Putin.
Guys, I'm totally going to run for office.
Right, right. Okay. I was reading something the other day, and I don't know how true this is. One of the journalists who is verified, so I just trust that, had said that in 2011, I think it was right after the White House Correspondents' Dinner, that he had done an interview with Donald Trump, and on Donald Trump's desk was a binder that said Iowa, and on the spine, it said Trump for America on it.
Interesting.
So Donald Trump coming out and saying, I don't know how true that is, so don't quote me on that, but, you know, keep that in the back of your mind as Mueller starts to, like, as information starts to come out, because right. If Donald Trump had started this process of running for president shortly after the White House Correspondents' Dinner, then this is the information that Mueller is looking at, which is, right. When did it start? How did it start?
And who knew?
And who knew?
Right. Well, and Donald Trump has been threatening to run for president forever. So,
right.
You know, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I believe that there was that binder sitting there. I also believe, and this is me being a little conspiracy theorist here, a little bit of tinfoil hat hair, but I also believe that Trump has been groomed by these sort of larger entities, whether it's Russia, whether it's special interests, who knew that he could be used as a figurehead.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to use idiots.
Right.
The village idiot is always the easiest to take advantage of.
Yeah, there have been several movies about this. So yeah. I think we all know by now.
Right.
So, and Lawfare, which did a great job explaining all of this, if you're confused about any of this, please check out Lawfare's blog post about this or this article about this. They said something really, really interesting about this indictment. They said, quote, the document is what prosecutors term a speaking indictment. That is, it describes the facts about the defendant's activities beyond what is strictly necessary for the counts it charges. The purpose of a speaking indictment is more than to simply list charges. It is to tell a story. And the story this one tells is of the Russian side of the bigger picture. specifically the Russian side of events that took place outside of the Russian government and intelligence agencies. I think what they're getting at here is that, like you said, or like we said earlier, Drexel, these Russian nationals are not going to be tried in the United States.
Right.
Putin is not going to extradite them. They're never going to see.
And actually, Moscow has already today come out and said, these are silly.
Right. Right.
So Moscow's already like, meh.
I mean, if any one of these nationals shows up on vacation in the French Riviera, where we have a close relationship with France, we can conceivably get them. But as long as they stay in Russia, they're never going to see the inside.
They're
going to
be holed up in the Ecuador embassy with Julian Assange.
They can just hang out there forever. Yeah,
right.
And so I think what they're getting at here is that this isn't necessarily about these 16 individuals and these three Russian entities. This is about setting up the story. This is about the framework. You know, we like to talk about collusion. And so this is sort of like what Trump officials, the Trump campaign was colluding with, right? You sort of have this abstract idea of collusion, but it needs to be a conspiracy. A collusion needs to have two sides. It needs to have that push and the pull. And this is setting up the Russian side of that.
I'd be interested to know, because if you look at the timeline that we've gotten so far, Paul Manafort, which we're going to talk about Rick Gates here in a second, Rick Gates and George Papadopoulos were all indicted first.
Right.
Had the Russians been indicted first and then Paul Manafort indicted second, there would have I like how smart Robert Mueller is being about this.
Right.
Because had those indictments come second, then it would have automatically triggered this idea that they're somehow connected.
Right.
And then made the Trump administration just go batshit crazy.
Right.
Instead of saying Paul Manafort's actually being indicted right now for something a little bit different.
Right.
But we've got this other sealed indictment that we haven't even released yet.
Right.
And then we're going to come out with something else. So, you know, we said earlier, a few episodes ago, Mueller's has a hard task to make it stick.
Right.
And make it stick to where the Republicans in Congress don't have a choice of what to do. Trump voters are never going to believe that.
But it doesn't necessarily matter.
It doesn't matter. What matters is the law. And I was watching, this has nothing to do with the Russia investigation, but I was watching a 60 Minutes interview with Oprah last night. It was the second part of the Divided. If you haven't watched it yet, go watch it. It's really interesting. Although I'm a little disappointed. I was texting Devin last night. I said, I'm a little disappointed because we can never find really great Democrats to
speak on
behalf of Democratic issues in a way that they can combat what's coming at them. But one thing that was really interesting that this Trump supporter said to me, and this was about the sexual harassment accusations against Donald Trump. He said, well, if they're true, why don't you just take them to court?
Yeah.
Okay. That aside, the only way that Trump supporters are going to believe this is if Donald Trump gets taken to court.
Right.
So, like, that's where we are right now.
Right. And I think that that's a really smart thing to look at here is that Mueller needs to not just find what's going on and bring these indictments forward and figure out exactly what happened. He has to do it in a way that is compelling and in a way that is, like you said, that will stick. Because if he brings these indictments forward and they get dismissed, that's an even bigger problem than if he didn't bring them in the first place. So then Trump becomes a martyr, and then this whole thing becomes a martyr situation. Like it's verified as a quote unquote witch hunt.
Until he does a tweet storm at 11 o'clock at night, which is a pattern. Every time, you know, he could have easily done a tweet storm about Parkland. And nobody would, I mean, people would have been like, oh, that's pretty compassionate.
Right, right, right.
And that would have been the news pickup.
Right.
But then his last tweet, like, went after Oprah, and you're like,
Don't come for Oprah.
That's one area. And it's like, what's Oprah going to say back?
Right.
She's not going to say anything back to you.
Oprah's going to sit in her giant-ass mansion.
Right. Oprah is richer than you. She does not have to worry about you.
Right.
Black women are not worried about you.
Exactly.
We're too busy watching Black Panther.
Right.
I like how I just put myself in the black woman category, by the way. I said, we are seeing black women. What I meant to say was that black women are out there watching Black Panther. Going to see Black Panther.
Right.
Wakanda forever.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and so, you know, it's just, it's one of those things you're like, you look guilty, sir. Right. You're doing the most.
Right.
You don't even have to say anything.
Right.
Why say something?
Well, what's also interesting is that this set of indictments, and I want to, before we get into that, actually, I want to go back to this timeline because this operation, the Internet Research Agency, was set up in 2014, as we talked about. So there were no, the shape of the 2016 presidential elections hadn't been set yet. But some, but what did happen in 2014 was the invasion of Crimea by Russia and the evacuation of Viktor Yanukovych, the pro-Russia president of the Ukraine, from the Ukraine. And lest we forget, Viktor Yanukovych was the person that Manafort was working for when he was leading the Ukraine, and basically backed by Putin. So I think 2014, while doesn't sound significant to the 2016 presidential election because no one had even announced they were running yet, I think it's significant in a larger geopolitical context. This also came after, I mean, Putin in particular already had a grudge against Hillary Clinton.
How long was she Secretary of State? She was 2008 to 2012. Okay. Because I was wondering if she had had, if John Kerry had taken over by the time the invasion of Crimea had happened.
I believe he
or
had.
Or Secretary Clinton had.
I believe he had. But Secretary Clinton had said that Putin's reelection as president was a sham. And Putin was pissed. She was the one
like
who.
Like father, like son.
Right. Right. So she, like father, like so she was already in Putin's crosshairs for personal reasons, right, in addition to political reasons, because he thought that she stirred up protests to his reelection back when she was Secretary of State. So while 2014 is sort of a liminal date, it's not exactly the 2016 presidential election, but it has roots in important moments in this larger political timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to Trump's tweets, because I think that this is a really important part of all of this, these indictments, like we just described, these indictments actually go out of their way to say we are not indicting any sort of American in these indictments.
Right. I believe it said that Americans were unwittingly
right. If there
contacted.
Was, right. If there was contact with Americans, it was unwitting.
I feel like that is the small basis that Trump and some of his supporters have latched onto.
Right.
To make it sound like we didn't know.
Right. But I think also by saying that, though, they're really giving themselves room to come back and say,
like, actually,
JK,
psych.
Just kidding.
Made you look.
Right. And so what's interesting is that Trump going on this tweet storm about this is that these indictments are not even about him. He made them about him.
Right.
It would have been easy for him to sit there and say, wow, I'm so happy we're getting to the bottom of Russia meddling in our election. I'm so happy that we as a country are figuring out what's going on, and taking the narrative completely off of him and his campaign.
Although I at one point I thought he did try in a Trumpish way to admit slightly that Russia had meddled. He said in a tweet, I never said that Russia never meddled. I just said it could be Russia, could be China, could be a 400-pound person sitting on their thing. Okay, so which one is it?
Right.
Especially when every intelligence agency, Republicans, Democrats, everybody across the board have all said that Russia has meddled. And, you know, even these 13 indictments, you would think, like, I always sit back and I go, what are his supporters thinking if you're not doing anything? If you didn't do anything, great. But somebody tried to interfere with our elections. Like, it's unpatriotic to me that you've got a bunch of people who were like, oh, it's unpatriotic to take a knee. Well, I can tell you something that's really unpatriotic, messing with American democracy.
Right.
Which is something that George Bush touted when he was president. You know, American democracy abroad, under attack. American democracy at home is under attack. And yet Republicans, or at least Trump supporters, have yet to come to terms with the fact that the two can be separated. Part of that interview last night, and Frank Luntz, the conservative pollster, they had brought him on to say something like, you know, what are some of the key words that you heard during this group? And he said the word denounce came up a lot. The difference is, and those supporters, you know, the people sitting around the table said, we don't want you, or at least the Democrats or the liberals on that side said, we don't want you to denounce Trump because that is negative.
Right.
We want you to denounce or to say that you don't support a lot of the things that he says. You can do two separate things.
Right.
But to a lot of those people, they are unable to separate Trump from Russia
right
now in their head. And so Russia becomes equally the good guy in their eyes than
as Trump, Trump does. So if you wanted Trump to win and Russia helped him win, then Russia's the good guy.
Russia did something, but it's okay. But they said they didn't do anything, so it makes it that much better.
Right.
You know, because that's the Donald Trump way between whether or not it was him, whether or not it was Roy Moore, whether or not it was, you know, any of the other Republicans who have come out and Rob Porter.
Right.
You know, I didn't do it, so it must be true.
Right.
And so, and Donald Trump made that perfectly clear right after he got elected. Putin told me it didn't happen.
So it didn't happen. Right.
And so Russia, again, becomes the good guy.
That is such an interesting point. Because it speaks to one of these larger problems that we're having with the Trump presidency, which is there's no such thing as fact or fiction anymore. It's just whatever he says is true.
And to him.
To him. And to this narrative that he's creating, and to this narrative that, frankly, a lot of the media has latched onto, where they're calling out his lies. Like, seriously, I saw on Twitter, somebody was like, CNN's ticker writer should get a friggin' Peabody Award.
Seriously.
they're fact-checking these lies on the fly, and that's great, but they're still giving him that podium.
Well, he's the president.
I get
so
that.
So he does get the podium. I think it has a lot to do with the questions that the media asks. They've got to do a better job of not letting folks like Mick Mulvaney or the legislative director, I can't remember what his name is, go on television or Meet the Press or CBS Sun, or the CBS Sunday Morning or any of those shows and be able to rickroll them. Chuck Todd does it a lot where he'll just let them talk and he won't question what they say.
Right. At least
for the most part. He'll like broach it, but he won't
get there.
Get to the meat of what the question is.
Right.
And so, you know, I'd love to see a show. I'd love to see CNN, MSNBC and the news organizations really just put like a thing on the side of the screen where they can fact check on the fly.
Right.
Forget the lower third. Just make a box on the
like
side.
Half.
Right. And just let people and just show people like, actually, you can check it here. Here's what this person said.
Right.
And do that.
I mean, and I understand that as one of the president's powers, really, as everyone learned in 10th or 11th grade history class, one of the main powers of the president is the power of the podium and shaping discourse and shaping national ideology from this very powerful bully pulpit. And I understand that. And I'm the first one to say, like, we need to protect the office of the presidency and the norms around that, whether or not Donald Trump is in office, because eventually someone else, hopefully, we'll take that up. And I think we need to protect that. But I also think desperate times call for desperate measures. This goes back to the 2016 campaign coverage where CNN ran 20 minutes of an empty podium waiting for Donald Trump to show up. You just don't need to give him that much time.
Right. And I'm hoping, hopefully, news organizations
have
learned.
You certainly don't need to give Stephen Miller any time.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he's ever going to go back on CNN after Chris Cuomo, but and he's certainly never on MSNBC.
No, that's
so
true. That's true.
But, you know, Donald Trump, after Parkland, he did, I want to say 20 minutes. I won't even say he did 20 minutes. Probably did 10 of a statement. Not one time did it mention the word gun.
Right.
So, you know, whoever, it's befuddling to me. I love
a great
that
word.
That you could get away with something like that. And the news media doesn't mention that. So they just got to do a better job of doing that.
Right. I also think it's really important to point out that these indictments that came down really, like I said, painting this picture of what collusion is. But I do want to take a quick second to talk about what exactly the Internet Research Agency did and why the whole shop was set up in the first place. And this, it was this, like you said, they were a troll farm. They were a troll farm, and they were specifically set up to create, quote, fictional and fraudulent American personas on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, as well as political Facebook groups designed to attract American audiences. The organization then allegedly used these accounts to help Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, and Jill Stein, and to undermine Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz, as well as to encourage U.S. minority groups to abstain from voting. So this was a very sophisticated operation that targeted the underpinnings of our political discourse, which I think is what's so dangerous about it. They weren't overt about it. They literally made up profiles, and this is where the bank fraud and the identity theft comes in, is because they used real social security numbers and real mailing addresses to set up fake PayPal accounts and fake bank accounts to pay for these things and to create a false political narrative. And I think that that is just so important to remember. And it's so important to remember that this, you can say that this was just to sow discord in democracy. And I think that was the original intent when it was set up in 2014. But the New York Times reported on this. And they said, quote, their tasks, so the Internet Research Agency's tasks, were undermining Mrs. Clinton by supporting her Democratic primary campaign rival, Bernie Sanders. Those instructions were detailed in internal documents. Mueller got his hands on internal documents, y'all. Like, he's fucking serious.
He's not playing around.
Use any opportunity to criticize Hillary and the rest, except Sanders and Trump. We support them.
Here's my question. What's really interesting is, so it was set up in 2014. Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz hadn't announced at that point.
No.
Okay. So then my question is, WikiLeaks gets their hands on DNC documents early on in the campaign that said that we want to elevate Pied Piper candidates.
Right.
So Russia, then this is my tinfoil hat.
Right.
Russia must have read through that and said, we're going to take out the Pied Piper candidate. We're going to elevate the Pied Piper candidates that they want. We're going to help them elevate those Pied Piper candidates.
Right.
And so if that's a, if I was looking at the whiteboard and that's a connection to be like, okay, so that's where they got that information from. Because there's no reason why they would have gone after Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz had the Clinton campaign not looked at them as non-threats.
Right. Exactly. And I also, and it also just goes back to the fact that they were not, you know, Putin is not a Democrat or Republican. He's an opportunist. But he was also pro-Trump for a very specific reason and not pro-Marco Rubio or pro-Ted Cruz.
Right.
And I think that's an important thing to remember. I also just, one of the things that cracked me up is Varsha, when she was putting together this outline. One of the ads that the Internet Research Agency ran was, quote, Hillary is a Satan and her crimes and lives have proved just how evil she is. And Varsha says, ugh, use proper grammar. You mean she is Satan or is satanic? There aren't multiple Satans.
Oh my gosh.
That just cracked me up.
That's funny.
Okay, Drexel, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Trump's tweets about Russia and connecting them to the Parkland school shooting. You know what's disgusting? Trump's White House. Also, your toothbrush, probably. I can't help with that there's filth in the White House, but I can help with the toothbrush thing. Quip is a new electric toothbrush company that's refreshing the way people brush their teeth. Quip is a sexy, cord-free electric toothbrush, and with Quip, you don't have to worry about getting new brush heads or toothpaste. They're delivered right to your door on a schedule, so you replace your brush on time. 75% of us don't refresh our bristles every 3 months. And I feel like that's being generous. I feel like it's probably more like 95% of us. And I definitely don't. I'm only barely an adult, so I maybe replace my toothbrush every year if I remember. But with Quip, I feel like a full grown-up who actually replaces her toothbrush on a doctor-recommended schedule because I get them in the mail every 3 months. And that's why you need Quip, to put a necessary yet annoying aspect of your personal care on autopilot. Quip starts at just $25, and right now, when you go to getquip.com/hellbent, you get your first refill pack free with your Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/hellbent. Go to getquip.com/hellbent. Really quickly about how Trump connected the Mueller indictments to the Parkland shooting. School shooting.
Well, he's very good at I don't know that he ever, you know, when you got that book as a kid and you were like, connect the dots to create a drawing.
Yes.
I don't know if Trump ever understood how to do that.
Like you follow numerically, not yes, however yeah, yeah. you want.
However you want. He's doing however you want and not colored. He's definitely never colored by number.
No.
He never connected the dots by number. He's just all over the place. Yeah. He's a scribble.
Right. And again, in trying his damnedest to take the focus off of himself, he lands the focus squarely back on himself. It's such a self-own. Like it's like,
you know, if you ever played baseball or softball or whatever, and used to have the bat with the string on the end,
yes.
and you had to hit the ball and it just kept coming back to you, yes. so you could just try. That's what Donald Trump is doing.
Seriously.
He keeps trying to hit the ball, but it's got a string attached
and
to the bat
right
and
back.
Just coming right back to him.
Right back to the face.
Tetherball.
Tetherball. There you go.
Trump's playing tetherball with himself.
Yeah, because he tweeted, quote, very sad that the FBI missed all of the many signals sent out by the Florida school shooter. This is not acceptable. They are spending too much time trying to prove Russian collusion with the Trump campaign.
Which is interesting because the FBI really isn't involved in the investigation that much.
No, not really.
They're not really doing anything.
No.
They're just getting information. They might be helping out a couple times just
right.
to make sure that they can arrest a couple people, you know, throw some indictments together. But
right.
they're not. I think that's something that Trump is very good at, which is confusing people as to who's doing what.
And why.
And it's untrue.
Right. And then creating these false connections out of nowhere and just, again, just expecting us to take them as true.
And I think that Rod Rosenstein is doing a really good job of just kind of staying under the radar. But somebody in the Justice Department has got to say, well, the FBI is not really, they're not really
doing
in charge
it.
Right
yeah.
now.
Right. And that's why we have a special prosecutor.
Right.
Is to keep them out of it.
And so I think that at some point somebody's going to have to correct the record or over time, that's going to become a problem.
Right.
One thing I want to ask you, Adam Schiff said something really interesting this weekend. He was being interviewed either by the LA Times, I think it was in the LA Times over the weekend, where he said that, and the president latched onto it in his tweet storm, where he said that the Obama administration knew about this, which we know,
mm-hmm.
And that they should have been more aggressive at doing something about it. Now, the fact is, which Adam Schiff never responded, at least as far as I know. I haven't looked at his Twitter feed since the Trump tweet storm. But we know that Mitch McConnell knew about it.
Right.
And Republicans didn't do anything about it. Nancy Pelosi, everybody knew about it. Speaker of the House, everybody knew about it. Nobody did anything about it. Yet Adam Schiff somehow blamed the Obama. I won't say he blamed. He just brought it up and he said, you know, brought up the Obama administration. Do you think that the Obama administration should have said something at the time, or do you think it would have still hurt Secretary Clinton in the long run?
I think that they were in a precarious position.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yes. I think Obama had spent a lot of time campaigning for Hillary, obviously. It was no secret that he wanted her to win. And I think because the Trump campaign had already started sowing these seeds of this election was rigged and that this isn't a valid election, which we now know is kind of true, but again, it put it
tetherball.
Tetherball. But to now put it into context of October 2016, if he had said something, he was basically saying that this election is rigged. And if Secretary Clinton had won, it would have given the Trump camp even more ammunition to say that this was an illegitimate win. So I think that that was his logic. Again, I don't know.
I could see that being a part of his logic had Mitch McConnell not said, no, you cannot put this information out.
Right, right. And yes, and I think people forget that the president, his main power is the bully pulpit. That's really what the president can do. He can't act unilaterally for the most part. Obviously, there are ways you can act unilaterally. But Mitch McConnell also said, no, we're not putting this out there. And I do think that there was some calculus there on the Obama side, though, where he was thinking, okay, maybe they are interfering. But because we still don't know the outcome of this election, depending on who wins, that can be serious. That could be serious ammunition for the losing side, which at the time everybody assumed would be Trump.
You know who else tried to warn us?
Who?
Harry Reid. Harry. On the way out the door.
Harry Reid. You know.
What's he doing?
I don't know.
Somebody find Harry Reid.
Yeah, right?
He needs to come on this show. What I would do.
To get Harry Reid.
An interview with Harry Reid.
Oh, my God.
I want to know what he's doing.
What he's doing. People, I feel like, really underestimated Harry Reid when he was the majority leader in the Senate. This was a man who worked for the Nevada Gaming Commission in the 70s.
Right. That, he knows. Like,
oh, no.
Like, how to shook and jive.
Oh, yeah. There is no way that he does not know exactly what's going on.
Right.
Hello?
Good morning.
Hey there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for speaking
Absolutely.
With me. Yeah, like I said, I really wish we were talking about literally anything else.
I know.
It's awful.
Deja vu.
Yeah, seriously. So, I mean, I guess I just want to jump right in. So,
sure.
I mean, so this is the 18th school shooting in 2018 alone, which is, what, 45 days?
Right. It's basically the 18th time that a gun has gone off on school grounds. And, you know, we think it's important that we keep track of this. The government isn't. And
right.
So we keep track of every time a gun goes off at a school, whether it's accidental, whether it's a suicide or a homicide. It's important that we track something that's happening in our country that doesn't happen in peer nations.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's really kind of astounding because we are the only sort of quote unquote developed nation that has this sort of crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no other high income country that sends their kids to school and worries that they're going to be shot. And other countries that have had this problem where they've had mass shootings, for example, Australia, acted immediately and have never had that kind of shooting again.
Right. So it's clear that the NRA is at the sort of nexus of all of this. So is the NRA all about money? Is it about the gun lobby and the money associated with that? Or is there something deeper that I'm just not understanding?
The short answer is yes.
Yeah.
It is absolutely all about money. The NRA before the 1970s, in the 1970s and before that, was really sort of your grandfather's NRA.
Right.
They were a hunting and gaming organization. And they did a lot of training, and it was very membership-oriented. And then they became more radicalized. As the country moved right and as the Tea Party immersed, so did the NRA. They went in the same direction. And they really became a front for gun manufacturers. They have an annual budget of about $350 million. The vast majority of that comes from gun manufacturers, not from members. They really don't need members in order to survive. They just need to continue to be funded by gun manufacturers. And they only do the bidding of the gun manufacturers. And the whole point of what they do is to market and sell guns. That's the sole point of the NRA at this point.
Right. It seems like, though, they're viewed differently than some of the other lobbies, like industry lobbies, because there's this idea that it's membership driven and that this is what people want. But that's not really the case here, from what I can tell.
That's right. They've been very successful at pretending, you know, that they are somehow a grassroots movement. They call themselves the world's oldest civil rights organization. But the reality is they don't have as many members as they say they do. They say they have 5 million. They've never been able to prove that. And their demographic is a white man probably over the age of 50 or 60.
Yeah.
So that is an aging out demographic. And they're also selling more guns to fewer people. So they've convinced this vocal minority of gun extremists that they need an arsenal. You know, they need 7 AR-15s and 6 Glocks. And that is how they've continued to maintain their profit margins until Donald Trump was elected. And now there is what we call a Trump slump, which means gun sales are down by over $100 million since Donald Trump's election. And in fact, companies like Remington are filing for bankruptcy.
Wow. That, from what I understand, from what I've read, that tends to happen when you get a conservative president, because there's this understanding that they're not going to take away your guns. There's no rush to go purchase guns. And so you end up with kind of a slump that way.
And there's also a glut. So after Sandy Hook and after Pulse and after San Bernardino and all these other shootings that the NRA was able to gin up fears that, of confiscation, they just kept manufacturing guns and making guns, and now there's no one to sell them to.
Right, right. And they have these huge stockpiles.
Yeah.
And the AR-15 in particular hasn't – it was the gun used in the Parkland, Florida school shooting, and it hasn't an interesting history. It's been banned before, right?
In different sort of machinations. So it's interesting when you talk about an assault weapons ban, which is – sort of a double-edged sword, because the gun, for example, that was used by the shooter at Sandy Hook would have been banned under the original assault weapons ban that expired. However, he could have gotten the exact same gun with minor modifications called something else under that same ban.
Right.
It is certainly becoming the weapon of choice for mass shootings. It puts the mass in mass shootings, but the 96 Americans who are shot and killed every day are mainly shot by handguns. And those can function as semi-automatic weapons as well.
Right, right. Yeah, there is a lot of talk about assault rifle bans, but that's certainly not the only issue with guns. It's just a very high-profile one.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then, so there is a background check system in place, but it doesn't seem like it's enough. I mean, this young man cleared the background check. Apparently he bought the gun legally, passed the background check. Obviously he had the intent to go shoot children. So how can we make something like a background check actually function as a check?
So there are a few things. First is that there is a background check system that was put in place by federal law in the 90s. However, they did not anticipate that people would buy guns online. And they did not close the loophole that allows gun sales at gun shows without a background check, and even in some states at garage sales. So now you can basically go on something like armslist.com, agree to buy a gun, meet that person in person where you live, and there's no background check required. And many, many gun sales are done that way.
Wow.
In fact, millions. So one thing we've asked Congress to do is to close this private sale loophole that requires a background check on every gun sale, no matter what. Some gun show dealers are able to function as private sellers, even though they sell thousands and thousands of guns every year.
Right.
They don't have to call themselves licensed dealers. We know when that background check loophole is closed for a vast variety of reasons that gun violence is almost cut in half across the board, including mass shootings. And that may be just because it's a barrier to entry, however minor, or that people are afraid that they won't be able to pass a background check. But so that's one issue we have. The other issue is that when people do try to buy guns from a licensed dealer, whether they have a criminal history or a history of domestic violence or they've been adjudicated mentally ill, if they try to buy a gun from a licensed dealer and they're rejected because the background check comes back and says they can't buy a gun, that information is rarely reported to police, depending on the state you're in. So we spend a lot of time trying to create laws that require that, because it's really a huge red flag, right?
Right.
The issue in Florida, there are a few. The first being that 18-year-olds are allowed to buy semi-automatic rifles, but they can't buy a handgun until they're 21.
That seems weird.
That seems
it
odd.
Seems a little weird. Yeah. I know I don't want my son, who's 17, to have access to an AR-15.
Right.
Just because, you know, your brain isn't fully developed till you're 25. We know this from science. So the fact that we would give high-powered military-style rifles to essentially children is probably a bad idea. And the other issue here is that Florida does not have any red flag laws. Only five states have red flag laws, which means that families or police can petition a judge for a restraining order when someone seems to pose a danger to themselves or others and remove those guns that they have for a temporary amount of time. This kid bought five guns within the last 5 years. Right. He was a known danger. Had that law been in place, it could have been utilized. We've passed that law as volunteers in California, Washington, and Oregon, and 18 states are considering it right now.
Right.
So that is a law that could have helped in this situation too.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like a lot of this debate after mass school shootings, because there's a norm now because it happens so much, it seems like a lot of times it ends up being about mental health or somehow isolating the one person as completely separate from larger issues. So my question, I guess, is how can we avoid that narrative? Because obviously this is a systemic problem. This isn't just one person one time doing something. So
right. I mean,
how can we knit those back together?
Yeah. Other nations are full of disgruntled teens or even severely mentally ill people. Everybody, you know, every nation is home to all the problems we experience here in America. We watch the same movies. We play the same video games. We actually have the same rates of admission for attempted suicide.
Wow.
What we have in America is easy access to guns.
Right. That's
full
the only
stop.
Difference.
Full stop. If you are a disgruntled teen who hates your classmates in another country, you cannot access magazines and a semi-automatic rifle and tactical gear. You just can't.
Right.
And there are a lot of issues in this country, but, you know, we make them worse through easy access to guns. And, you know, Nicholas Kristof at the New York Times has a really impactful line. He says, in other nations, abusive men put their wives in hospitals. In America, they put them in graves.
Right.
So that is really this idea of pivoting to mental illness is such a straw man. I mean, you know, there's sort of this plan that they go through every time there's a shooting, which is to offer thoughts and prayers, to say it's too soon to talk about it, then to say it's mental illness, and then to do nothing. And to hope everyone forgets about it until the next time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when people say mental illness, unfortunately, these same people have absolutely no desire to address that issue in any way, shape, or form. In fact, the first thing President Trump did when he was elected, the very first thing he did was to roll back an Obama administration rule that prevented severely mentally ill people from accessing guns. It was the first thing he did.
Right, right.
And Governor Rick Scott in Florida, in 2011, one of the first things he did as governor on guns was to try to prohibit, to basically put a gag on physicians and prevent them from talking to their patients about whether they were gun owners and how that might impact their physical health.
Wow. Wow. I didn't even know that that was something that needed to be legislated.
It passed. And he signed it into law in 2011, and it was overturned by the Court of Appeals last year.
Right. It also feels like the issue of guns is really locked in with this toxic masculinity narrative. We know that a lot of these young men have history of violence, have history of domestic abuse, like you said, and Nicholas Kristof saying abusive husbands put wives in graves here. So is that also part of our problem, or is it just that guns, you know, because we market guns as this sort of masculine thing. And does that play into why we have so many guns?
I do. Again, there's toxic masculinity in every country. Mm-hmm. There are abusers in every country. What we have done is to allow gun manufacturers to market their guns. I mean, the Bushmaster AR-15, there was a whole ad campaign called Consider Your Man Card Reissued. And then it would be a picture of an AR-15. And so what we have done is to mix this toxic culture toxic masculinity in with guns. Right. So if you already fall into that camp, you're much more likely to also gravitate toward being a gun extremist in America.
Right, right. And then I also, there was one thing that Trump said this time that really caught a lot of people off guard. And he really tried to put the onus on the students and the staff at the school, saying, if you see something, say something, we could have prevented this. And he made it seem like it was our fault as citizens for not seeing this. But then he's also slashing money in the budget for education aimed at bullying prevention and mental health assistance. So is this just another, I don't understand like what point he's trying to make here.
Well, not only does his budget prevent the needed assistance for bullying prevention and school safety, but also it cuts the background check system by millions of dollars,
right.
All designed by the NRA.
Right.
But, you know, I started to see that bubble up on social media that night of the shooting, and it was very clear that the NRA was disseminating talking points to its lobbyists, Dana Loesch, and to pundits and to media like Fox News and to the president and to members of Congress beholden to them. And basically those talking points said, we are going to point fingers at the FBI and to the community that did not do enough to stop the shooter from the shooting, as opposed to pointing the finger at the lax gun laws that enabled this at a federal and state level.
Right. And then they came up with something about they want to arm teachers. They want to put guns into schools as a prevention measure. And I just don't understand why there's this idea that more guns would solve this problem.
Right. It's almost like, you know, if there's a fire, let's throw gasoline on it. I mean, this is, make no mistake, this is a ploy, a marketing ploy by the NRA that sees an in to putting more guns everywhere after tragedy. And so immediately they get their lawmakers to work on legislation in the states that would require, would force guns in K-12 schools and on college campuses. Yeah. Every time this happens, we see that. And it just profits gun manufacturers, right? Right. And it's not even armed guards or security, trained security. It's arming volunteer teachers who want to get, you know, somehow, you know, want to be armed. And if you look at police in this country, very highly trained police shoot their targets about 30% of the time.
Yeah.
And we're going to expect volunteer elementary school teachers to be sharpshooters. I mean, it's beyond absurd.
Yeah. I'm always struck by that, you know, there's always like one case where somebody comes in and saves the day with the gun, but it's like that person might be highly trained. They might be, you know, amazing. Like most people cannot do that with a gun. I just don't understand.
No, and I want to be clear, you know, there were armed police at this school that were security. There was also an incredibly strong security system at the school.
Mm.
But this kid was determined to get into the school, and he did, and he had an AR-15.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's the key here. He had an AR-15.
Yeah. Well, I know that your group, Moms Demand Action, actually got a K-12 guns in schools bill pulled from consideration in the Florida State Senate yesterday. So
we did.
I mean, that's amazing. So is that kind of local activism a better approach to dismantling gun laws than a more federal one?
Well, it depends on the government, right? So right now we have a president and a Congress that's very unlikely to pass anything positive. I mean, they didn't even prohibit bump stocks after Las Vegas. That is just stunning to me. But there are some things we can do at the federal level. There's two really dangerous bills that are winding their way through Congress already. One would deregulate silencers. So if you can imagine the shooting at the school the other day with a silencer, it would have been very hard. It would have been harder to hear the gunshots.
Right. And isn't that some bullshit hearing health safety, something about hearing?
Yeah, they call it, the NRA says it's going to protect the hearing of hunters when, you know, we don't even give silencers to police forces or to the military. We let them use earmuffs and earplugs. So that's a ridiculous argument. It's really just about selling accessories because they're having this Trump slump. And then the other piece of it is concealed carry reciprocity, which 60 Minutes did an amazing segment on last week. But that is a bill that would allow the lowest common denominator for a gun permit in this country to apply to every state. Even if you live in California, you would have to allow someone from Alabama with a permit to carry their gun in your state. And in Alabama, you can be convicted of dating violence. You can have DUIs in your background. You can be 18. You can have no live fire training. All of these sort of dangerous, easy ways to get a gun permit in Alabama would then apply everywhere.
Wow. Wow. It just seems like they're
way of dismantling states' rights.
Yeah. It just sounds like there's ice water in these lawmakers' veins, honestly. It's
absolutely insane. And, you know, you hear someone like Marco Rubio after the shooting in his own state saying criminals are going to get guns no matter what we do. And then you realize he got $3 million from the NRA.
Right. Yeah. And it's so interesting that Republicans are the states' rights politicians until until it comes to stuff like this, where you're actually dismantling states' rights. So I guess my last question, and I know this is a big one, and I know we're all just so tired of it, but what can we do? I mean, I feel so demoralized personally.
Well, don't, because, you know, we have to fight even harder. We have to be angry and not sad and not cynical. And we have to know that it's on us to make this change. Right. I get requests for a huge march on Washington every time something like this happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand that instinct, but this is hard work. It means joining a local chapter of Moms Demand Action, even if you're not a mom, and rolling up your sleeves and committing to do the hard work, because that's what this is. We show up at every gun bill hearing. Our track record every year is killing about 90% of the NRA's gun bills.
Wow.
And then we pass good bills, like the red flag laws I was talking about earlier, like the 25 laws we've passed across the country that disarm domestic abusers, and the 8 states in which we've closed background check loopholes. We are doing that every day in this country during the legislative session. And we also meet a lot with our senators and our Congress representatives in district.
Yeah.
Or we go to D.C. And in fact, we have so many commitments now from senators who are saying that they will vote against concealed carry reciprocity, which we actually think we might be able to beat now in the Senate because of that. So, you know, if you text the word ACT, A-C-T, to 64433, you will get a text back, and we will show you how to enroll so that you're part of our organization. And the really exciting part of all this horrific aftermath of the shooting, the silver lining is that we've had so much interest from students in organizing that we've created Students Demand Action.
I saw that.
So if you text the word students, plural, to 64433, we will get you involved that way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Because I, you know, my son's preschool sent a letter home saying that they were doing live active shooter drills now. So to keep my 3-year-old baby safe. So
as if it's an active nature, right?
Yeah.
As if it's not preventable.
Exactly. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for sitting down with me early on a Saturday morning.
Absolutely.
And like I said, I wish next time I talk to you, it's going to be about something great, like Rise to Run or something.
Yes, or we've passed a really significant piece of legislation, or when we kill concealed carry reciprocity.
Yes, when we kill concealed carry reciprocity. I think that will be the next big thing we do. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, Drexel, so let's get into something good.
Yeah, tell me something good. Oh, I like that.
I can't sing. Drexel, what are you grateful for?
Well, it's President's Day.
It is President's Day.
For everybody except for Donald Trump.
You can't have this one, Trump.
Nope.
Don't celebrate.
I think that my gratitude check is going to have to go to a president.
Yeah.
Particularly the former one.
The most recent.
The former one. And I'll tell you why. Other than everything that he has done or did as president, there's a lot of stuff that we agreed with that he did almost 80% of the time.
Sure.
20% of the time, there's a lot of stuff that it's questionable.
Oh, sure.
Any president's like that.
Sure.
What I will say that I'm particularly grateful for, and this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show with these kids from Parkland who really took a tragedy and turned it into action very quickly. That kind of stuff would not have happened had Barack Obama never sowed those seeds
right.
In youth to say, you are the future. You have the power to make the change. On his way out, that was part of his last speech,
right,
to tell us we have the power to affect the change. And I remember, I think he had a quote where he was like, you are the future that some, I can't remember the quote, but it was really good. But you know, basically you have the power to affect change. You are the future that you keep, whatever. And so we should be grateful for that piece of it, that part of history that has reignited a fire that we had not seen since the 70s, where people are engaged between Vietnam to now. We weren't that politically engaged. 9/11 happened. People came together, but people weren't politically active.
Right.
Barack Obama came on the scene. We started to get politically active because he made people excited, but then things started happening. And then we got more, you know, we started laying that groundwork. And then here we are in 2018 where, you know, high schoolers are telling the adults they need to start acting like adults.
Right.
So,
A lot of people attributed Obama's 2008 win to the young vote. And
oh, absolutely.
That's what it was. I mean, he energized an entire generation of people.
I think that whoever the next Democratic nominee is going to be has got to bring that same charisma.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm grateful that Barack Obama has not only shown us that we have to be politically active every day, but laying the groundwork that every Democratic candidate that comes after him has to be him or better. So that's my gratitude check for the day on this President's Day. What about you?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because my gratitude check are those students from Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, who are organizing marches and walkouts after this school shooting. So in conjunction with the Women's March in Power Branch, which is dedicated to youth advocacy, and I love that the Women's March has a youth advocacy arm. They have since the beginning, apparently. And they want to reach out to these young people even before they're of voting age. Because that's the problem with part of our democracy, is that because your constituents are only 18 and above, there's less of an incentive to connect with high schoolers. But the survivors of the school shooting are using their voices to take control of the gun reform debate. And like you said, they're targeting specific people. They're not generalizing this. They're saying there are people in this situation that are specifically responsible, and we are calling them out by name. And so there's a national school walkout on March 14th. So the goal is for students and staff across the country to walk out of their classrooms for 17 minutes at 10 a.m. to quote, protest Congress's inaction to do more than tweet thoughts and prayers in response to the gun violence plaguing our schools and neighborhoods. So, you know, they're basically saying your thoughts and prayers are worth exactly dick, and we want some actual action. And then there's going to be a march on Washington on March 24th. And the protest will, quote, demand that a comprehensive and effective bill be immediately brought before Congress to address these gun issues. No special interest group, no political agenda is more critical than timely passage of legislation to effectively address the gun violence issues that are rampant in our country. One of the students, a survivor, Cameron Caskey, said, quote, the tragedy at Stoneman Douglas was not because of Stoneman Douglas. It was because people like the shooter, whose name I will not say, were able to buy these weapons. I think that the fact that it's taking a whole bunch of kids that were shot at in their high school to stand up and say this is a whole bag of bullshit says a lot about where we are as a country.
But that's why I likened it to Vietnam, because it did take a whole bunch of young students to stand up to say something's not right.
There's a whole bag
of bullshit. We need to make a change. And here we are, you know, four decades later.
Right.
In the same situation.
Exactly. Well, the Vietnam, the draft, and they were like, we're the ones who are being put on the line. And that's basically what these kids are saying. We're the ones who are being put on the line. So stop fucking around. So as Shannon Watt said in our interview, moms demand action has created students demand action. And you can text students to 64433 to join. And I also love that students from Stoneman Douglas are standing up for themselves on social media. There were two tweets in particular that caught my attention. One was from Carly. She said, quote, "I was hiding in a closet for 2 hours. It was about guns. You weren't there. You don't know how it felt. Guns gives these disgusting people the ability to kill other human beings. This is about guns, and this is about all of the people who had their lives abruptly ended because of guns." So I think that's very powerful. It's very powerful.
Between Carly and Cameron, yeah, and Emma Gonzalez. Who she's just a little firecracker, which, yeah, is great. Like watching her, they've been on interviews all this weekend. It's so interesting because when I was watching her speak and I was watching Cameron speak, I was like, Cameron must be like student body president.
Seriously.
Because the way that he talked about political issues, I was like, who is this little politician?
Yeah, right? Like all you need is a blue suit and a red tie, seriously, and you're ready to go.
And, you know, I think that Emma Gonzalez, you know, she
gave a speech that seasoned politicians would be jealous.
That they want to cannot give.
Exactly.
What I also love about this whole situation is that it was a mixed bag of race.
Yes.
To where in a lot of these kids and teachers were shot and killed, and this school that was affected, and so, you know, it brought everybody together in a way that nobody could like latch on to a certain group like we did with Orlando,
right,
and certain things like that. So
right, a very diverse
group,
because gun violence affects all
everybody.
Populations. It's not limited to race or class or gender or sexual orientation. It is a uniquely American crisis that affects literally every person in this country.
Hey, Devin.
Yes.
It's Monday.
Yay.
You know what that means.
I do.
It's Dickwad of the Week.
Yes.
We need like I need to do like a voiceover.
Yes.
Where it's echoes.
Week.
Yeah.
That's a really great idea.
Or maybe I'll just do it like that every week. Dickwad of the Week. Who's our Dickwad of the Week?
Okay. Our Dickwad this week is a 78-year-old woman named Marion Hammer.
Marion, 78.
She is 78.
She
years
running
old.
For president too.
Apparently, she totally could.
Oh gosh! Don't put that out there.
Don't put that out there. So she is an NRA lobbyist in Florida. She has been around in the NRA scene in Florida since, I don't know, dinosaurs roamed the earth, and She gets paid a lot of money to do her work there. She gets paid almost $200,000, which is more than any other state lobbyist. And because she's so enmeshed in this culture, she's basically able to function as an unelected legislator and often has more power than legislators to do and enact legislation. And she can tell governors what to do, and she can tell Republican lawmakers what to do, because the NRA gives these people fuck tons of money, and she's the one who doles out those checks. So she is just sort of indicative of this NRA problem.
Indicative.
Dickwadative. to this problem. Thanks, Drexel. It's great. She was a big part of enacting the Stand Your Ground legislation, which allows people to shoot people if they feel like they're in danger.
Which, if you remember, that was all brought up during Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. And it basically reformatted Florida's self-defense law. And so I think, like I said, this is part of a larger problem. The NRA has all of these politicians beholden, plus they have lobbyists in these states that can basically act as unelected legislators. So there was a really interesting interesting interview. Basically, the too long didn't read of it is that the NRA lawyers and NRA lobbyists and advocacy groups are the ones that create this legislation. An expert in this says, quote, everyone in the Florida legislature knows that every gun bill is drafted by an NRA lobbyist. So these laws are not even being created by elected lawmakers. They're being created by NRA lobbyists like Marion Hammer.
Well, I mean, gone are the days of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington where people actually create their own legislation. No. Yeah. I mean, you could watch The American President.
Right.
If you're a fan. I mean, I love Aaron Sorkin, so get to see how legislation is maneuvered.
Right.
Very quickly. Yeah, I mean.
I mean, there have been instances, not just of with the gun lobby, but all sorts of special interest groups, where lawmakers will submit legislation and they forgot to remove the special interest groups like headings. So they've literally submitted legislation that is, it says like by this special
NRA
interest group.
is the watermark on that.
Yeah, seriously.
That's funny.
Okay, Drexel, last but not least, after a packed show, what are some action items? So something our listeners can do after they listen to the show.
Don't forget to call your representatives about common sense gun reform. I know we've got a lot. We talked last week about immigration reform.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot that they got to do.
Right.
Basically, there's a lot that they, you know, there are some issues that are high priority right now.
Right.
And so you've got to get out there. You know, somebody in the group, I can't remember, you know, I think she works in Washington, had said that, you know, here are some steps that she suggested to do when you're calling your representatives or you're getting in contact with them. So obviously it doesn't need explanation. Find out if your reps take money from the NRA. Action like the kids are doing in Parkland.
Yeah.
Call those motherfuckers out.
Seriously, name check them.
Name check them and say on social media, because they look at that stuff.
They do.
Somebody does.
Somebody does. And it really, I was reading an article. There was a long-term research on how we contact our lawmakers and how that works and what works and what doesn't. And they were saying that sometimes social media, because it's kind of a soft medium, and you don't know who's trolling, who's being sarcastic, whatever, it can be hard. But they do look at it. Right. And they do. Politicians have tiny, fragile little egos. That's why they're in politics.
It's true.
They think they're amazing. And when someone tells them that they're not.
Because you got to be a real egomaniac to think that you know what's best for your city.
Seriously.
Or your state.
Seriously.
Or whatever.
And every single politician, there are no exceptions. I always say, I'm like, I love Barack Obama, but he didn't run for president because he thinks he sucks.
The other part of that is, you know, Democrats, obviously like Heidi Heimkamp and Joe Manchin, like Bernie Sanders, those folks, you know, they've got some NRA.
Sure.
Some money.
Right.
From some places. So make sure you're staying on top of them. I'd love to see Democrats take the non-oil pledge, like a gun pledge, like they take the non-oil pledge.
Right. Yeah. And even if they don't take money from the NRA, a lot of Democrats shy away from the gun debate because the NRA is so powerful.
Well, that and nobody knows how to have that conversation.
Right.
And I think that at this point, it's not about, you got to, I almost want to be bad and say, like, it's terrible to say, but you got to take the Donald Trump approach.
Right.
Just say it.
Just say it.
And
just get out there
and do your job. I also want to give a shout out to Kirsten Gillibrand because she announced last week that she's not taking any PAC money. She's one of a handful of senators that are not taking any PAC money as she goes into her election this year. Obviously setting herself up for any potential run later on in life. But you know, I think that is a starting point where Democrats have got to say, we're not going to take money from X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Here in California, I will be, if you're in California, or you're in San Diego this weekend, I will be at the State California Democratic Convention, cause I'm a delegate for my district. And, you know, all of the gubernatorial candidates, I believe, have all signed on not to take oil money. But yeah, I mean, Democrats have got to start taking pledges that mean something.
Right. And then also, as Shannon said in our interview, you can text students to 64433 to get involved with Students Demand Action. And you can text ACT to 64433 to get involved. And like she said, you don't have to be a mom to get involved in Moms Demand Action. She's like, that's just the name. We want people who are dedicated to doing the hard work of getting common sense gun reform on the table. So, So Drexel, packed show.
Great show.
Great show.
I don't know. This Manafort, this Mueller thing, I don't know what we're going to do, y'all.
I don't know what we're going to do.
But it's
this
gonna
is
going
to make one hell of a bottle. Of a book, yeah.
A bottle, too. Bottle. We might need the bottle. While reading the book.
I tried to say book and then novel.
Yeah.
So.
Bovel. I like it.
But this is going to make one hell of a book, and my grandchildren are going to read it and be like, what the fuck? It's, and I'm going to be like,
they got to teach that in schools.
They're going to teach it in schools.
What not to do.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. You can follow me at Devin Handy.
And you can follow me at Drexel Hurd.
And like we said, we have big news coming up. So
lots of big
stay
news.
Tuned. You can follow the show at Hellbent Pod. And we will be back here. Drexel and I will be back here on Monday, and I'll be back here on Thursday.
See ya.